This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. That's right, we have got a very cool episode coming for you today. And if you couldn't figure out that clue, I don't know how else to help you.
Well, what problem are we solving today?
How do you talk to a robot?
I get it. How do you talk to a robot? Very good, Jeff. So who is our amazing guest today?
When we want to talk to a robot, we go straight to the source. We have the fantastic Dr. Carlotta Berry, and she is the Lawrence J. Giacoletto Endowed Chair and Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at the Rose Holman Institute of Technology.
Wonderful. Welcome to the show, Dr. Carlotta.
Hi, Jeff and Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me.
We are thrilled to have you with us, and you do so many amazing things. And can I just say, you get to work with robots! Woo! I'm so excited.
I do, and I love it. I love every minute of it. I'm an electrical engineer and controls engineer, but I also like to say I'm a robotics engineer.
And all of that is so cool. So we like to start out the show sometimes with, did you always want to work with robots as a kid? Were you one of those kids that started building them a long time ago? Or did you just find it recently?
So I was not. And I like to say I am one of those kids who broke the mold. I was not skinny when I was younger. When I was younger, I wanted to be a school teacher. I was all about my dollies, baby. I gave them homework.
You gave your doll homework?
I did, and I graded, and they didn't always get it right either. They needed to get on it, honey.
I love it. Okay, so now we know where the Professor Berry comes from, because that started right away. So how did you make that transition from being Dolly Girl to electrical engineer and robots?
So when I was in middle school, I really loved math. So I had decided I was going to be a high school math teacher. I wanted to teach high school math. So by the time I got to high school, I was going to be a calculus teacher. I was in a program. I had gone to a magnet school because my principal told me in the sixth grade I was wasting my time at my current school. And they put me in a program where a career counselor said, with your math and science skills, you should really be an engineer. And I said, a train conductor? I don't want to drive trains. I went to the library and I looked up engineer because I'm dating myself, before internet, before cell phones. I actually had to walk to the library.
We were there.
I read it in a book, looked interesting, and I was like, eh. So I decided to get a math and an electrical engineering bachelor's degree in college because if the engineering thing didn't work out, I could slide back to math teacher.
Right.
I loved it. I love both, actually. I still do. And I took my first robotics course in college. Yeah.
And you were hooked. Is that what you're saying? You were hooked when you
And what really hooked me is I went to Georgia Tech, but their robots were so doggone expensive that only the grad students got to touch them. You had to look it up through a page. And I was like, ew, this is no fun. I want to touch the robot.
You sound like every student that I've ever worked with. When there's robots in the room, every kid wants to touch. Nobody wants to be the one watching. You're going to get to do. So what was your first experience at college being able to actually work with the robots?
So I programmed the robots. We wrote the software. We looked behind the cage to see how they did. And when I graduated, I became a controls engineer, which also does robotics. So my real hands-on experience came during my internships when I was in college. And when I went to go work at Ford Motor Company, I worked at a manufacturing plant facility
right.
that had real robots. So I got to work on the robots. I got to work on the line. I got to write the programming. So it went from being, I was still behind a cage, but now instead of a glass cage, an industrial cage, so it didn't knock me across the plant. But I got to have that real world experience each and every day at work.
So
that's great.
So tell us a little bit, because I think this is fascinating, about how they use the robots on the lines to make the cars.
Yeah.
Why is it better to use robots, or why do they use robots?
I got you, Jen. So
good.
When I teach my students, I tell them that robots are ideal for the 3Ds. The 3Ds of robotics are there for tasks that robots are good for tasks that are dirty, dangerous, and dull. So the ones that you are talking about, an industrial facility is dull because the robot is sitting there and moving some piece of technology or a door or a windshield over and over again. It becomes dull.
Yes.
It's dangerous because a person doing that all day could get injured. They could get hurt. They could hurt their back. They could hurt their arms. And it is also dirty because you can also have a plant that has robots that paint cars, breathing in those fumes, right? And getting that stuff on you is not good. So dirty, dull, and dangerous. The 3Ds of robotics is why some things you don't want humans to do.
I love that.
Yes.
I don't want to go too far into the car world, but because you were just talking about the paints and moving pieces, I'm imagining there's a lot of different types of robots that are in a plant like that, not just one that, you know, is a mechanical arm that picks something up, moves it to the left, grabs the next, moves it to the left.
That's called a manipulator. That's called an industrial manipulator. That's the one that looks like the arm that picks things up and moves them.
Okay.
Those are the kind I worked on, but now it's a lot different.
Okay. I was just going to ask, so did you work on one type of robot in the factory or all the different types?
So then I worked on the industrial manipulators, pick and place robots, the ones that picked up heavy stuff and moved it, is what we called it. I worked in a windshield plant. So my robots picked up the windshields and stacked them onto carts. However, since then, I now do mobile robotics. And if you think about Amazon warehouse, where they fill the packages that get delivered to your home, those are mobile robots or wheeled robots or mobots. They have wheels on them. So they drive and they go pick up packages and they drive them over to some kind of pallet and they stack them and then they get shipped to you. So now a warehouse has mobile robots. They have industrial robots. And there's a third kind called a cobot. A cobot is called a cooperative robot because it looks like it has like a little head and it has arms and it can stand next to you and you work with it together. So now all robots aren't behind cages anymore.
Okay.
A cobot now has force sensors so it won't hurt you. So you and the cobot may be standing by next to each other where he puts on a part, you put on a part, or you work together. It's cooperative. It's like your buddy, your robot buddy.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard of those.
Yeah, Baxter is a cobot. That's one. And there's another one called Sawyer. Sawyer is also a cobot.
All right, I'm writing these down. I'm going to have to
I think every listener just wrote that down and we all have homework to go check these out.
Yes.
And I think my next homework after that is finding my local Amazon warehouse to see if they give tours on the inside. So I can check this out.
Those are called Kivas. The robots that drive around and pick and place are called Kiva. If you're Googling that, those are Kiva robots. Yeah.
I'll have to look those up. Okay. So now you got me really intrigued. So you've worked with all these kinds. Well, the question that we're talking about today is, how do you talk to a robot? So are you actually saying talk, or are you saying program, or what do you mean by that?
So interestingly enough, you can talk. So the great thing about robots is that you make that robot into what you want it to be by putting things on it, right? So I can have a robot with just wheels, but I can add a sensor to it. So I can now drive it with my television remote. So I can use my television remote to drive my robot, talk to it like that. I could also use my cell phone to talk to my robot if I add software so that it now can... I can take button clicks on my phone to talk to my robot. This robot I have with me today has sonar on it. So I use my hand to talk to this robot because it wants to run away from obstacles. So I figure out how I want to talk to my robot, and then I add the stuff to it so that it understands what I'm saying.
Jeff and I, we're both like, our jaws are on the ground going, this is so cool.
Honestly, this one is beyond cool because this is literal real world for you.
Yeah.
The way you're describing it, it sounds like you have the robotics knowledge. You know what kind of robots have been made already. And if you need a new kind of robot that you can imagine, you go build that.
Correct. Correct.
But you make it sound so easy. I was going to say, but you make it sound so easy. Is it as easy as you're making it sound?
Yes, it is. So here's another example. I could use gestures. Like I could point to my robot and say, drive over there. Think about the Kinect sensor or think about the sensor on your Wii game system. I can add that to my robot. And now I can actually do little hand signals or I can do sign language. And my robot has to interpret that by adding. So the intelligence of a robot is tied to what you put on it, right? So if I add sensors for it to understand things, it gets smarter. I like to tell my students, when I give you your robot at the beginning of the semester, it's like a newborn baby, but don't drive my baby off the table. It doesn't do anything until you write the code to make it do something and you add the sensors so that it can read the world around it to make decisions. You have to make your robot intelligent. Your brain becomes the robot's brain.
I love that.
I feel like every listener right now, Jen, I don't know if you're doing this. My brain is. I feel like every listener right now is thinking of every sensor that we've ever used. Like you just mentioned the Wii.
Yeah.
When we had the hand paddles and my brain went to virtual reality.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, you know, playing a game of Beat Saber out there and all of the different types of sensors. You know, you have facial recognition on your cell phone to unlock it rather than having to touch it. All of the different types of sensors that are already out in our world are viable options for you to add to a robot to make it do what you want.
You're exactly right. You could have a personal robot that turns on with facial recognition and put it on your phone. So your robot only powers up when your face turns on your phone.
Wow.
So you could do. Yeah.
Is there like a store you can go to like build your own robot? Or do you have to have someone like you who has all these parts? Because it sounds like this is like, I want like a Build-A-Bear, right? But build my own robot.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So I will tell you, there are websites online like The Robot Shop, like Adafruit, like Spark Fun, DigiKey, Arduino website. You go to these websites and they have playgrounds that show you how to do the software, show you how to do the electronics. I'm also an open source hardware trailblazer. So as my work is in that area, I do open source hardware and software robotics, which means I design robots like Lilybot, who's with me today, so that if anyone goes to my website, they can download the materials to 3D print the robot, to find out where to buy the stuff to put the robot together. I have the software so you can get the code. And that's part of what I do is I call it robotics for the streets. My STEM is for the streets.
I love
it. For anyone. Yeah.
I like it a lot. So with your students, as you are Professor Barry, you've mentioned your students a whole lot and they each get a robot that they have to take care of and not let it, you know, their newborn baby.
Yeah.
Are your students able to take their robot during the course of a semester or a year-long class in any direction they want? Or do you give certain guidelines?
I give guidelines only because I don't want to go crazy grading many different iterations, but we have a robotics minor at my school. So depending upon which class they take, they can do different things. So there's a mechatronics class where they do a project based upon microcontrollers and they can do whatever they want. In my class, because I teach them how to control the robot, everyone has to get to one end, which is called path planning, localization, and mapping, which basically means, can you make your robot go from point A to point B? Can it figure out where it is in the world? And can it make a map of the world?
Okay.
And they also take a robotics engineering course. But since I am a co-founder for Black in Robotics, and we do outreach through that, in that organization, we've done elementary school robotics, where it's virtual online.
Oh,
at middle school level, we help them build their own robot and write the code to have it avoid obstacles. So we give them a start and then say, use your creativity now and go wild, right? I feed you and then you just take it from there.
That sounds great.
It does. And so tell us a little bit more about your Black in Robotics, because I think that's really cool, because that was my question was, okay, so now I'm all excited, but where do I start? You know, can you tell us about your program with that? And then like how the rest of us could start.
So Black in Robotics and Black in Engineering, I'm co-founder of both. Both started in summer of 2020. They were doing the Black in X movement, which was this big resurgence of all of these organizations online that spoke out against STEM inequities and bias and injustice. In particular, Black in Robotics is really about diversifying robotics so that we see more people of color as well as women doing robotics, and to speak about being in the room when robotic systems are used, deployed, and designed. Because some of the concerns that have happened is some people may not be ethical, although we know that's part of engineering. What are robots being used for? Are they being used in military operations? Some people are trying to outfit them with guns. Some are using them for policing. So Black in Robotics is just about, hey, we want to sit at the table to have discussions about how we want to see our technologies used, and that we want to see diverse voices in those places, because you mentioned facial recognition, Jeff, and just recently Coded Bias, the documentary was released that talked about how facial recognition AI did not work well with brown and black faces, but police officers were using them with a driver's license to determine people had committed a crime. That's no bueno. These are the things that Black in Robotics and Black in Engineering speak to that talk about there is a whole community out there that wants to address how technologies are used and make sure they are accessible to everyone. So Black in Robotics, the way we do that is we hold virtual workshops, and we held them on Zoom during the pandemic. Kiddos could sign up with mom and dad sitting there together. We would ship a kit to their house and we showed them how to put it together and we showed them how to program it. So by the end of a 2-hour workshop on Zoom, they had a working robot.
That's super cool.
That's fun.
How exciting for that family to then come off of a Zoom call with a real robot in the house rather than, you know, you can listen to an astronaut, you can listen to anybody on Zoom. And for the last several years, we all have been, but to actually essentially hand in hand, walk them through having that in-house, what a connection.
Yes. We had a parent at our last one who lived in Tennessee, and I believe the other young man lived in Indiana. And at the end, the dad came on and said, I just want to thank you because that is my son's best friend. And when we moved to Tennessee, he was devastated. And because of the workshop, they were able to build robots together in the Zoom room with us. So they were able to see each other and do something together, even though they weren't in the same state anymore.
That's fantastic.
That's terrific. So you have been doing robots for a while now. We won't say a long time because that sounds, you know, but you've been doing them for a while.
Yes.
But you don't sound like you were anywhere near the retirement game yet, which is wonderful news. So my question is, what do you want to do in the future? What are some of your goals in the robotics world, both at your school with your students, but also in Black in Robotics or outside of
both? Absolutely. So another thing I started during the pandemic is I started my own company. It's called NowhereSTEMinist.com. And it has a goal to diversify STEM by bringing robotics to more communities and bringing diverse people to STEM through robotics. Wonderful. And so really my bucket list, if you want to think about it as such, is really to do more outreach with people through this open source hardware robotics, to get robots in the hands of people who you don't expect to have them in their hands. And that doesn't just include kids. I'm talking about, we've had workshops for adults as well, who said, I've decided I want to learn how to program. I've decided I want to build a robot. I want to learn some electronics. So just being able to touch people who want to touch STEM, no matter what their skill set is, no matter what their age is, that's what excites me.
What a great bucket list item.
Yeah, I think that's fabulous. I mean, we've talked on the show before. For me, STEM by definition is diverse. It should be, right? The more people from the different backgrounds and everybody's different thought processes is what makes STEM amazing for everyone and so much better.
Yeah. And we know what happens when it's not diverse. I mentioned already the facial recognition issues with the AI, the Tuskegee experiment, HeLa cells. We know what happens when there's not a diverse community of people in the room to go, right, maybe we shouldn't make that live, or maybe we shouldn't release that yet. One of the examples I give my students is the crash test dummies. When they first had the crash test dummies for cars, they were all the size of an average male. And then later somebody said, what about pregnant women? What about children? They had to go back and say, we had to make crash test dummies in a lot of different sizes so that everyone was safe in the car, right?
Right.
So it's having diverse voices in the room is when somebody goes, we haven't considered that women's hands may be smaller. And so are they going to fit in that, or things like that?
Yes. So you probably don't know, but I have a book called Save the Crash Test Dummies.
Yeah,
and it's all about the history of car safety engineering. And that's one of the things that I talk about in there.
Yes.
But the sad thing is even though they have the female crash test dummies, they probably don't use them as much as they should. And I've seen articles about that.
Yeah.
But we're hoping that will change. But yes.
The other one, like when I was pregnant, is learning that my seatbelt was not supposed to be worn the same way.
Yes. Right?
So a pregnant crash test dummy too. Because I can't have the belt over my belly, you know, things like that.
Well, and they have crash test dummies of different sizes because people of different
little
sizes they have little people, but they also have larger adults. So that because everybody is going to get affected differently. They even have a crash test dog.
Oh, that's
I know. I'm like, I don't know how many people belt their pets in. Maybe you should buy a 120-pound dog. That could probably do that, but I don't know that I'm going to wrestle her into a seatbelt. But I do have a question. So do you work with AI, artificial intelligence as well, or do you use mostly sensors, or is that all together?
It's together.
Oh,
so I've actually been asked that before. What's the difference between AI and robotics or machine learning or deep learning?
Right.
And the key difference is that it's software, and my robot could just run off of motors and electronics, but it wouldn't be very interesting. So as a controls engineer, when I write software to make my robot do something, I'm giving my robot artificial intelligence. So if I now have a robot that can follow me around my house, or can follow a wall, or can go pick up my soda can and throw it in the trash, I'm writing AI for my robot. So when my robot brain gets intelligence, that is AI or artificial intelligence. And my software does that.
I love that explanation.
Yes.
It really brings AI, which seems like a very high level concept, right down to everybody. And I love the examples you just used of, you know, you are a very high level robotics engineer. And the two examples you just gave were my robot was following me around my house, or it picked up my can and brought it to the trash.
Yeah.
That actually led sort of right into my question of, I have an 11-year-old daughter. She's used a bunch of different types of robots, Lego EV3s to Spheros to Ozobots to some other smaller kits. And a lot of times her and her friends will sort of reach a plateau of using a robot of like, okay, I know how to do four or five or a half a dozen or a dozen tricks with this robot. And then they kind of move on.
Yeah.
Is there something that you could say to younger listeners, and I suppose to everybody, because we're talking to everybody just to get robots into more hands, on how to continue challenging themselves with the robots?
So absolutely. So I think they have to do that, because my daughter was on the robotics team for Vex Robotics and Lego Robotics. I was the coach.
Okay.
So she did both. But you're exactly right. I think putting your kids in any kind of competition teams will allow them to continue to grow if there's one near your home, like First Lego League or Vex Robotics or Sea Perch. Any of those type of organizations is one way to expand their horizons. If they're just at home and they have reached their limit on those canned robot activities, I highly recommend getting them into microcontrollers or Arduino, like I mentioned, because now the world is their oyster. As long as they have a microcontroller and a breadboard and the electronics, you can buy more stuff to add to them. There's an Elegoo kit. There's a Spark Fun Inventors kit. So after you make the robot, you can go and buy more sensors. Some workshops I've done with kids, we add light sensors and we make the robot follow light. You can add a line following sensor and make it follow a line. So exploring Arduino microcontrollers to build a robot and add on the sensors, the world is your oyster.
Okay, so I need to follow that up with one. that question was really for the kids, for our younger listeners that probably want to continue doing that. The follow-on is for the moms and dads of those kids that mm-hmm. want to do that. I feel like I've run into a lot of moms and dads that are scared of making that leap from a boxed robot
yes.
to an Arduino where it's all, there's no instructions 1 through 12 of what I'm supposed to do. I think that's beyond me.
Yeah.
Can you talk to them just a little bit?
The Spark Fun Inventors Kit is the one that I recommend. It has a book, it has color pages, and it actually walks you through step one, take it out of the box. Step two, stick this wire in this hole. Then after that, you now have your exposure to Arduino and you can slide over to Ella Goo. You can slide over to my YouTube channel, which has instructions
nice.
On it.
Yeah.
We also have Black and Robotics videos on how to do this. But the Spark Fun Inventors Kit is, bar none, the best intro Arduino kit I've ever seen. And it's for their learning materials. All of the electronics are pretty much the same, no matter what kit you get. But there's this beautiful, I wish I had it with me. There's this beautiful color book that has pictures for everything. That's the way to go. It's
wonderful.
About $80 to $90 on Amazon. But yeah, that's what we use actually for the Black and Robotics workshops for introductory Arduino and robotics. We use the Spark Fun Inventors Kit. That's what we use.
Well, that's good to know. I'm actually going to go look that up because I've always wondered about robots. But yes, I'm of the age where my class at the Naval Academy was the first class to get computers and they were practically as big as your desk. So I'm a little like, robots? I don't know about that. But what I wanted to ask you, so where do you see the future of robots going? Do you see all of us eventually having robots in our house to, you know?
I do. I see a similar. I think you kind of already have robots in your house because AI, Alexa, all of that is artificial intelligence on some level. It's just, we're not like Rosie from the Jetsons yet, right?
I would like one of those.
Yeah. Like when I meet kids, they ask, can I program a robot to do my homework? And when I meet moms, they say, can I program a robot to wash the dishes? Right.
There you
go. So I've never had dad ask what robots would be used for. Maybe to, I don't know, cut the grass. We do have robotic lawnmowers already, actually. And we also have robot vacuum cleaners, and we already have robots that can clean your pool. So I think that's where we're going first. More Roomba type robots or more grass cutting type robots. I think we're still a while off from humanoid type robots because we have to get past things like something called the uncanny valley, which is where people are a little freaked out when robots are a little bit too realistic.
Yes.
And if you're going to have something in your home, I think Jibo was one recently that's a companion bot. I think our next iteration is probably going to be like the robots that would be companions for the elderly or the disabled or just something that's around the house and talks to them like, hey, how was your day? Just so they're not home alone. I see that coming first before we're ever at the Rosie from the Jetsons phase.
Yeah,
sure.
So I want to ask you another question just a little bit further. Do you see self-driving cars then? And I know that's probably a little different from what you do, or maybe not, but do
not
you
really? So some of the technology and mobile robotics becomes extended when you have higher level sensors to autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars. My only concern with self-driving cars right now, thinking about no shade Tesla, is just like I mentioned about facial recognition. And right now some of this technology has bias and can't recognize things. We can't go to fully autonomous self-driving cars until we know a sensor can tell a brown face from a dog, right?
Right.
Or a billboard from the side of an 18-wheeler. Because these ones that are crashing are because of sensor error.
Yes.
That's where the problems are. So until that technology is reliable enough that I can trust it, I can't do that. If I can't tell if the car can see a mom with a baby in a stroller on a crosswalk versus a ball in the crosswalk, I don't want nowhere near that. Right?
Agreed.
You can roll over the ball, but not the mom.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. But we could get there in the next, 20 to 30 years, maybe, something, or sooner.
I agree. So like we could see, I know I recently heard about, I think it was somewhere where they were now using autonomous vehicles, kind of like as Ubers, but they still had a driver in the car with
them.
So I'm cool with that as long as that driver knows they don't take a nap and they need to keep their eyes on the road. Right.
No napping.
Right. So, and you know, the Google vehicles that drive around and make the map. So they do exist. but I'm just not ready for me and my family to be in them just yet. You know,
I kind of feel that way myself too.
I think that your explanation of robots throughout this entire episode, from showing us the one that you have, I believe it was the Lily.
That's Lilybot, yes.
The Lilybot that you have with us. And we'll have to put a picture on the website mm-hmm. so everybody can see Lilybot. But the idea that, and Lily has wheels on it, you'll see, but the way that you've talked about starting from a Lilybot at the very beginning of class, where it's like a newborn baby, and we just took the conversation all the way to what are some of the coolest robots right now? Tesla self-driving cars. It's a beautiful machine. It's not fully there yet, but it's getting closer, mm-hmm. certainly much closer than we were 10, 20 years ago. I feel like this conversation really can open listeners' minds of, oh, well, I'm only good with the little robots. Like, yes, I could do a Lego kit, but I couldn't do real robotics. And I really feel like you've sort of closed that gap or bridged that gap from, yeah. you know, if you can do little Arduino bots or any little bot, you are working with the same technology that's in a car yeah. manufacturing plant to a self-driving car.
Absolutely. I teach high school kids too. I've done some workshops okay. for them, and they do get to pick their own projects. And one year there was a young lady from China, and she said one of the biggest problems in China is finding somewhere to park. And that parking is such a commodity, and, you know, parallel parking. So what she made is she took one of my little mobile robots. She put a remote on it, and she made the sensors be able to detect a parking spot. And when she pressed a button, it autonomously parked itself because it was a very tight fit.
Okay.
So wow. that was her showing that wow. you can take these little bots and show where that would go if you were to put it on an autonomous vehicle. It's like a proof wow. of concept. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And by cool. the way, I would need that because I cannot parallel park. I've been driving for a very long time. Still can't parallel park.
They actually have cars that do that now, but you know, that's really cool. Yeah.
I would want one of them. Right now I drive a minivan, which makes it even worse because you'd have to get this giant minivan into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we could talk about robots forever. This has been a fabulous conversation, but now comes the part in the show where we ask our guests to give us a challenge. So yeah. what is your challenge, Dr. Carlotta?
So the first activity I always give my students, and this is my college students and my little students, is can you make the robot drive into certain shapes? Can Ooh. You make the robot okay. drive in a circle, a square, a triangle? And then after you do that, can you make the robot trace out your initials?
Oh, cool.
Oh, okay. So
if you attach a marker to your robot and put it on a big piece of butcher paper or on a poster board, can you make it write out the letters in your name?
Oh, that sounds fun. You're going to have your daughter do that and see if she can do that for us. And or I'm going to have to go make my own robot and try this.
Here's the challenge question, and this is going to mess up the kids. If you can't lift and lower the marker, it has to write your name in cursive.
Oh. Which those of us adults know, but kids don't know yeah. cursive.
I'm teaching my daughter cursive writing now because I told her you got to be able to write a check someday. And I don't know how you're going to do that since you never learned cursive.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. This has been such a wonderful show. Thank you so much for being on Solve for yes. Kids, Dr.
Thank
Carlotta.
You, Dr. Carlotta.
Thank you for having me.
Boy, did we go right to the source. Dr. Carlotta knows all sorts of information about robots and robotics, going all the way from young elementary school students right up through her college students. And yes. one of the things that I thought was most fascinating was that she talked about teaching her college students in some of the same technical ways as you teach elementary school students. If you don't know anything about robotics yet, you gotta start at the beginning.
Exactly. And I think she made robotics understandable and yes. accessible to those of us who did not grow up with robots or even cell phones or that kind of stuff.
Yes.
It makes me very intrigued. And we are talking about her challenge, and I think her challenge is really cool. And either you find a robot or
Maybe you just imagine it and, you know, throw a little literacy in there. Write about it. Like, how absolutely. Would you do it? Write up the steps. What do you think, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure there's a bunch of listeners that we have that have some sort of a robot at home, so they could do maybe. Dr. Carlotta's challenge right away. But if you don't, like, I don't have a robot in my house. If you don't have one, there's certainly other resources. Maybe your school has robots. You can go check that out. Maybe your library or a makerspace or yep. maybe even a local robotics club. There are ways to go find those things to be able to do that. But Jen, I love what you were just saying about writing out what the instructions would be. When I was yeah. teaching robotics field trips, we used to do something called human coding, where we would write out the instructions for something you wanted done. And then yep. a lot of times it would be another student had to do it. So you tell them how many steps to take forward, how right. many steps left, bend over, pick it up. And then yep. you give it to a whole nother set of students. And if they can follow your instructions and succeed in getting the task done, you have then coded that quote unquote robot.
Exactly. And, you know, so you could write it or you could go to the library and read about it because there's tons yes. of books about robots. A hint,
including
I
yours,
did
Jen.
A book. Yeah, I was going to say I did a book called Everything Robotics. You can go look that up. So if you do any of these things, we would love to hear from you. Be sure to go to our website, solveitforkids.com, because we'll have more information about Dr. Carlotta. And we will show a picture of her Lilybot there. So you'll want to go look at that. But you can always tag us on social media. We are at Kids Solve It, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we are excited to hear what you have done with your robots.
We are excited to hear what you have done. Until next time, you will hear Jen and Jeff on
Solve It for Kids.